Hi, and welcome to the CDC Understanding Impact podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we explore some of the biggest challenges facing developing economies and how the private sector can help overcome them. So in today's episode, we're looking at what development finance institutions can do to support investment in fragile and conflict-affected situations around the world. And to give you an idea of what we're talking about here, these may be areas with high levels of institutional or social fragility, or countries affected by violent conflict. And although the private sector in such situations is needed to provide jobs and opportunities to help alleviate poverty and instability, as you can imagine, it's often hard to attract commercial investment into such situations. So to get a better understanding of what development finance institutions can do in these environments, I started off by speaking to someone with a lot of experience in this area.
My name is Jumoke Jagmundokumu, and I am IFC's Regional Director for Eastern Africa, based in Nairobi, Kenya. And I am also responsible for all our work in fragile and conflict situations in Africa.
And I began by asking Jumoke if she could share a bit of her background in working in fragile and conflict-affected situations.
Okay, thank you very much. I think it was, now I'm aging myself. I think it was 12, 14, 15 years ago when Liberia just came out of conflict, when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was inaugurated. I went out to Liberia to set up IFC's first office in an IFCS location. At the same time, I was also responsible for Sierra Leone, which was also just coming out of, it had also just come out of war. And I will say in the conversations with the governments in both Liberia and Sierra Leone, and when driving to the office in Liberia, seeing the young men sitting with no jobs on the stoops, gazing out and thinking to myself, these guys less than a year ago were in command and control structures where they had weapons. It made it very clear to me, and it showed me very clearly why the working with the private sector to create jobs in fragile and conflict states is something that we need to do. So that was my first full professional experience in fragile and conflict, and that was way back in 16 years ago. And now I'm responsible for IFC's work in Eastern Africa, but also have responsibility for all our work in fragile and conflict situations. So it's very dear to my heart.
Can you tell us from your extensive experience of working in these kind of situations, what the private sector kind of adds that wouldn't be there otherwise?
Sometimes lots of people think that the best thing you can do in fragile and conflict situations is just the humanitarian aspect. That's just one key part. Without jobs, I mean, I alluded to the young men sitting on the stoops, 8 a.m. in the morning, I'm driving to work, they're sitting down, shouldn't breathe. Without jobs, without good jobs that can provide income in pockets, it is impossible for such countries to get out of. It is impossible for the individuals in these countries to actually be able to begin to fend for themselves. And what you may find is when that conflict is over, you may begin to find a conflict for resources, which we really don't want to go down. And so working with the governments to put in place the reforms that will enable domestic and private sector and international private sector activities happen, and working with the domestic players that we call sponsors to develop their entrepreneurial spirit, doing some of the technical analysis is necessary to create projects that can then be bankable and financeable by lenders, providing advisory services to them to ensure that they can design the projects the way the banks and lenders would look at it is really important. So those are the areas in which we focus on, both in addition to providing the lending financing capacity, it is really also important to provide the advisory services to enable such things to happen. Overarching this is the, I will call it business enabling environments, ease of doing business in the countries. These are usually impeded in such countries by weak institutional capacity, legal barriers, data and information gaps. And these challenges always deter potential international investors or locals in the diaspora from returning to provide investment. So working at both the governmental, institutional level to remove such administrative, legal, and institutional barriers to private sector investment, and then helping to develop what in some countries we call local champions, domestic entrepreneurial development is necessary to make this happen.
Development finance institutions clearly have an important role to play in supporting private investment into fragile and conflict-affected situations. But how can they best go about it? Jim McKay says collaboration is key.
Countries in fragile and conflict countries, there is typically lower capacity, both of the private sector and of the government. And so there is, should I say, less sophistication and ability let me put it this way, the more we are coordinated, the better we can help the countries help themselves. The more we are disjointed, uncoordinated, and given a number of the countries' reliance on the DFI's work, the more confusing the interaction between the DFI community and the countries will be. So I think collaboration, partnership, coming together to actually leverage each other and not duplicate things, I would say should be the name of the game.
And in 2019, to improve collaboration between development finance institutions in fragile and conflict-affected situations, the Blavatnik School of Government at the University of Oxford convened the first ever Fragility Forum. It's an event which brought together several DFIs and academic partners. Here's Richard Manning, who was part of the founding group.
My name's Richard Manning. I used to work for DFID for many years. I was chair of the OECD Development Assistance Committee. And after retiring from that, Paul Collier asked me to come and work with him at Oxford on various things. And out of that, one of the things we worked on was to convene for the first time in 2019 a forum of the development finance institutions, which really provided, the idea of it was to provide a dialogue space where DFIs could talk to each other about matters of common interest, particularly in relation to fragile and conflict-affected situations.
What's been particularly exciting for you as the forum has developed over what is now effectively 3 years or three sessions?
Well, I think that what we've managed to show is that development finance institutions face a lot of common problems, particularly in relation to these countries, and that they feel they get benefit out of talking to each other in a structured way in a forum where it's under Chatham House rules. You're not going to be quoted, but everybody can use the content. And I think we've learned that they appreciate that, and the fact that people are still turning up at CEO level or just below, I think tends to reinforce that. So I think that what started off as a one-off exercise is now becoming a sort of calendar fixture. We're already talking about the one we'll organize in the early months of next year. So I believe it's showing its value by the fact that people turn up to it, and that, with a lot of hard work by the convening institutions, we seem to be able to get an agenda which most people regard as relevant to their concerns.
And the 2021 Fragility Forum was held at the end of March this year. And CDC's CEO, Nick O'Donoghue, said it's particularly exciting to see discussions at the conference leading to practical actions, as two pilot projects, one in Ethiopia and another in Nepal, that came out of the forum have now been launched.
You know, I think when you do these things, the first time, there's a lot of talking and there's an aspiration for sort of action, but it takes a couple of years actually for things to really start to move. And I think one of the gratifying things particularly gratifying things about this year's conference was one, I think that we could point to pilots that had started, particularly that the one in Ethiopia and the one in Nepal that started a couple of years ago as a consequence of this conference having taken place and being organized, and that we could see that they had actually started to make real progress. So that was very encouraging.
One thing you mentioned earlier was the a pilot project that started in Nepal, which has recently launched. It's called Nepal Invest. Is there anything that particularly excites you about this project?
I think, well, a couple of things. First of all, it was three different DFIs, six different DFIs who I guess were involved in thinking about it, three who've actually funded it. And so that's an important, coming together to fund a common program is important. It's not the first time it's happened, but it's certainly one of the most significant. And the second thing, which I think is encouraging about that program, is it is very focused on what we call upstream. You know, it's focused on what do you need to do in a country like Nepal, which obviously has huge development needs? What do you need to do to actually make transactions that are investable? And so that sort of what we call upstream work is particularly important. So it's particularly encouraging that the Nepal Invest is focused on that area.
And that project in Nepal that Nick mentioned is called Nepal Invests and was originally developed at the DFI Fragility Forum. Formally launched in March this year by CDC, the Dutch Development Bank FMO, and the Swiss Agency for Development and Cooperation SDC, it aims to support more foreign direct investment into Nepal. We spoke to two people leading the initiative.
My name is Tej Bhattarai. I work as an economist at the Swiss Agency for Development and Cooperation in Nepal, and also from Nepal Invest. I'm representing SDC in the management committee of Nepal Invest. And excited to be here and to talk to you about the initiative.
Well, my name is Jörg Fried, and I am the chair of the Swiss Investment Fund for Emerging Markets. And I'm doing this part-time after a career as a development official that took me also to Nepal for six and a half years.
So why does Nepal need a platform like Nepal Invests?
Honestly, Nepal is probably one of the most complex places for doing business. First of all, for the Nepalese themselves. The regulation for private activity and foreign investments are very complex, partially contradictory, scattered across the administration. And this is the result of the political history of the country, but also of a general tendency to protect itself as a country against very important neighbors. On top of it, as you know, Nepal has come out of a deep political crisis, a civil war that lasted for a few years, close 12 years ago, and the inheritance of that is not totally digested. So, you know, it's not a fragile country in the sense of an imminent danger of violence, but it's certainly a complex country and a difficult country to operate for the local private sector, especially young, new enterprises, and for people who wanted to help them. So that's why, given the complexity and intricacy of the regulations and the political landscape, we thought we should try to deal with it constructively together.
Yes, absolutely. And we've been in Nepal for quite some time. And what that has enabled us to do is to develop a rich contextual understanding of Nepal, right? Its society, its economics, its political economy, most importantly. this spirit of collaboration of these country pilots to, you know, to engage in politically complex environments to patiently promote private investments, innovative activities, young entrepreneurs, and particularly small and medium enterprises was really well aligned with also what SDC Nepal's position is. You know, the private sector has also survived through periods of immense socioeconomic and political flux, but still to a large extent remained resilient. And going forward, of course, the private sector is going to be a key driver of the economy, but for the development of a dynamic, a sustainable and responsible private sector, you know, is key not just for economic growth, but also for social transformation. And we think that social transformation will eventually work to support Nepal's efforts to consolidate the political transformations that have been made over the last decade and a half. You know, what we've set out for ourselves is indeed ambitious. It's fundamental for us that this is something that enables the local private sector to spread its wings. And for that matter, Nepal Invests will, you know, have strong sort of network with the local private sector, as well as with the regulatory authorities, where that's relevant for the different projects, and to co-create, I would say, this initiative together so that, yeah, eventually for the benefit of those young, dynamic, innovative entrepreneurs and greater private sector activity here.
So that's about it for today's episode. Hopefully it's given you a good introduction on what development finance institutions are doing in fragile and conflict-affected situations. As you can probably guess, there's a lot more detail on this topic that you can go into, and we've put some links for further reading in the episode notes if you'd like to do that. Thanks very much for listening to this Understanding Impact podcast episode. We'll be back with another audio offering in a couple of weeks. See you then.